The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast coming at you on a Monday after a holiday weekend. Happy Easter, everybody. Hope for those of you who celebrate, you had a good time with family. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. Again, we're still working on maybe a new name, but we'll get to that in the future here. We're still working through that. But on the other line is Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He went to Baltimore, saw the Brewers take 2 of 3 from the Orioles to start this week, and then he was in Milwaukee for the series, 4-game series against St. Louis. Brewers win half of those games. They split them. So it is a winning week. I wouldn't call it a marvelous week for Brewers baseball, but it was a winning week of Brewers baseball, and so we've got to talk about that. Todd, your specialty, though, first of all, is asking what's for lunch. That is one of the things you love to do on social media. It was an Easter, we're recording this on Easter, so I gotta ask for you, Todd, it was, you know, a celebration. What was for lunch, or what was for dinner for Easter this year for you?
Ham, cheesy potatoes.
So good.
Broccoli and cauliflower salad, a roll, and a piece of cheesecake, and about 5 pounds of candy.
Yes, I love it. Now, did you make the cheesecake? Yeah. Those are a little tricky to make, but they are fantastic if executed well.
No, I didn't make any of that. I just show up and eat. Nice. That's my job.
Love it. I could definitely go for some cheesecake. We closed it down with dirt cake this year, which is very, very simple, but also very delicious. So that does sound tasty. All right. We'll start with the Brewers big picture, and it's going to be a theme continuing forward until the Brewers are able to snap out of it offensively, but we'll put that small sample caveat right at the top, like a pinned tweet, knowing that everything we say puts in mind that we're only talking about the first week and a half of baseball. But for Brewers fans who were concerned about this offense coming into the year, having seen how they did in 2021, this start to the year has felt like a scratching and clawing situation. They've been opportunistic. They've been able to win a few one-run games. And they're, you know, at 500. So you could be in a much worse position than they are, given how the bats have been swinging it. But the bats have struggled a little bit. So I guess I'd be curious, what you've seen, Todd, if there's anything that gives you cause for maybe a concern that this could last longer than just a few weeks. And if you think, you know, down the road, would David Stearns be willing to do what he did last year, which is make a pretty significant roster move to add to that offense when he brought in Willy Adames toward the end of May last year? It's too early to say whether or not that type of thing is going to be in the mix, but, you know, also the Brewers fans are already anxious. So give me a sense of what you're seeing so far.
Brewers fans anxious?
Yes.
I don't believe it.
It's how we live, Todd, here in the
end. I don't believe M. it. I would say it's 10 games. Now, granted, I get all the angst about this looks like the exact same offense as last year. I get it. But again, it is only 10 games. And there's a multitude of reasons why what is happening could be happening. I firmly believe that the shortened spring training has something to do with it. The pitching to me, at least the pitching that they've faced so far, has not been all that bad. They've faced their share of lefties, which has been interesting because they thought that they had kind of improved their lineup enough with the additions of Andrew McCutchen and Hunter Renfro to kind of counterbalance that, but they have not fared all that great against lefties again. So while I get all the angst and all the nervousness and all the gnashing of teeth and everything, let's give it a little bit more time. To me, the home runs, the lack of home runs is the thing that's kind of jumping out to me. And granted, you know, this is not what you would call a power-packed lineup, but I certainly would never have thought that 10 games into the season they'd have a total of, what, 6 homers?
Yeah.
5 homers? 6 homers. 5.
5, yeah, and only...
5, yeah, 5. Yes, 5.
And one of them from Victor Caratini. You're not going to see a lot from him, you know?
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, so I've covered 6 games so far in person, and I've seen 2 homers. It's crazy, you know, and like out in Baltimore, they pushed that fence back in left field, which the hitters are not happy about there, that's for sure. Cost Trey Mancini at least a homer. But it's a work in progress, you know. The favorite targets right now are Ozzie Timmons and Connor Dawson, of course, because they were the new hitting coaches. They're the new hitting coaches, and they were hired to rectify the situation, and so far things look a lot like they did last year. But I can tell you just from my experience that there's nobody in that clubhouse that's panicking right now. So I would say the same thing to fans. Just take it easy. Things will work out.
Yeah, and you mentioned, the new hitting coaches, and we've said this before, this isn't news. They didn't get a chance to work with these players in the offseason. If they have any ideas or if they have any sort of new strategies, implementations, they didn't get a shot. Like the spring just didn't allow for that to happen because of the labor, the labor issues. So, they're kind of just sinking their teeth into it a little bit, and so we gotta let that develop a little bit. I also think, if you look back at that offseason, I'm sure there are those who clamor for the Brewers to have signed maybe a bigger name offensive free agent outside of Andrew McCutchen. I just don't know where on the diamond, that replacement would have come in. You're not going to replace guys like Yelich and Wong and Adames, guys who are veterans or are, expected to be keystones in that offense. You're not going to get huge offensive upgrades at catcher or center field if that's where you were thinking it was going to come from. And, Rowdy Tellez at first base, I think, deserves a shot to prove himself, and so far has been among their best hitters, if not their best hitter to this point in the season. And outside of that, third base Luis Arias, there is a chance, and some preseason systems will tell you this, he could be their best hitter this year if he's healthy. And obviously right now he's not, so they're missing a little bit on that front. But I don't know who gets replaced. I mean, it's really kind of the guys you rely on at the top of the order, it seems like. Colton Wong, Willy Adames, Christian Yelich to a lesser degree. Kurt Hoge wrote at JS Online this week about some really encouraging signs from Yelich. And then his last two games, we saw a four strikeout game and then some weak contact on Sunday. So maybe that isn't as relevant as it once was. But, man, I don't know. Like, they have a good lineup on paper. Like, they've got a guy in every spot that you're like, okay, either he was really good last year or he's reliable. And for whatever reason, it's just not coming together. I guess, though, I feel like the top of the order is the thing, right? Like, if Wong, Adames, and Yelich all start hitting, even at a modest level, I feel like this offense is really good. Is that overstating it, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely have talent from the top to the bottom. And they really, Craig Counsell's kind of centered on a lefty-righty lineup. So against left-handed pitching, he'll still lead off Andrew McCutchen and drop Colton Wong down lower in the order to try to get more right-handed bats at the top of the lineup. That's a spot that McCutchen has hit in recently pretty frequently. So the name recognition is there. The talent is there. Now it's just a matter of getting the job done. And again, it's, I was saying last night after Saturday night's game that it feels like already 9 games, 10 games into the season, we're already asking the same questions that we asked over and over and over and over again last year. Why is the offense no good? Why are these guys struggling? Why can't Yelich hit the ball? And it just doesn't, we're not getting any answers that are any different from when we asked it the last time last year. So it's just one of those things that are eventually it's going to figure itself out. They'll go on a long roll. They'll start hitting the ball. They'll win a bunch of games, and everybody will forget about this. It's just part of the up and down, the cyclical nature of baseball season, I would say.
Sure. Another thing that I think is cyclical, or at least the Brewers are going to hope it's cyclical, are the high volume of walks we've seen from the pitching staff. And we'll talk about Devin Williams in a little bit, but there have been a lot of them, far more than what Brewers fans were accustomed to last year. Now, it wasn't quite so bad in that Cardinals series until Sunday, when they issued, I believe it was 7 free passes, it might have been 8, in that game that the Brewers had kind of in hand and almost lost. Devin Williams had a really, really rough 8th inning, which again, we'll talk about. But I do think that is the type of thing that ebbs and flows. We hadn't seen a stretch last year really this bad. Maybe one stretch that kind of rivaled what we were seeing in terms of high walk volume. But Brandon Woodruff had a really good second start this year in the home opener after he had a really rough opener at Wrigley Field. I thought that was encouraging. Freddy Peralta, less so, though. Freddy Peralta had a really bad second start. So maybe there's a little bit of concern there. I know it's probably the wrong way to look at it, to ask about it as a pitching staff in general, because every pitcher is going to have their own individual story. So I don't know if, we can really even evaluate walks as a staff necessarily. But from what you've seen and what you've heard, does that seem to be something that's making people nervous, or do they also see that as just a very cyclical thing?
I can tell you again, there's no nervousness about it. They've definitely been out of sorts to start the season. The walks have been something that nobody expected at the level that they've been issuing them. I asked the two best pitchers on the team about it last week, one day, Corbin Burnes and Josh Hader. And Corbin Burnes, I basically started the question off by saying, this is obviously very early, but do you think spring training is it, the shortened spring training is a reason for this, the lack of command? And he just said, I'm not making any excuses for myself. I get paid to throw strikes and I just haven't been doing it. So I got to get back on track with that. And he did look a lot better that second time out in Baltimore. And Josh Hader did say that he thinks that the shortened spring training does have something to do with it. And he also mentioned the fact that the Brewers have been playing in not such great conditions, warm conditions. The cold will affect the grip on the ball. And even though he's been pretty much lights out, Josh Hader, to this point, there are other guys, like you mentioned, Devin Williams, who have not been and have been kind of out of sorts. So we'll see too as the weeks go by here, days and weeks go by, weather starts warming up slowly. I would expect the walks to go down as well because it's too good a pitching staff from top to bottom to continue to have control problems the way they have been.
Specifically honing in then on Freddy Peralta, his second start on Friday night, he got two outs and four pitches to open up the game, and then four runs came across, six guys reached consecutively before he got his third out. A couple rough starts for him in a row. As with everything else, two starts is not a season. It's not a trend, but I guess with Freddy, I've always felt there's maybe a little bit more variance than with other guys. He's so interesting because he just wouldn't give up any hits. He couldn't give up. You couldn't hit him, but you could get on base against him. He's prone to the walk occasionally, as much as anyone is in the staff, which isn't necessarily saying he's overly prone to the walk, but we have seen that so far this year. From what you've seen, is there a discomfort that Freddy Peralta has right now that you think can explain some of this? Or again, are we just, talking about two starts?
I think that's just kind of Freddy Peralta. Excuse me. You can look at Adrian Hauser kind of in the same light. Every start, it seems like he has one inning where he loses command for a little while, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's back, and he goes right back to pitching the way he was. It happened again on Friday night. Sorry, Saturday night. And it's on those guys to try to make those bouts of ineffectiveness and wildness further and further between, basically. Like you said, Freddie's got tremendous stuff. Adrian Hauser has tremendous stuff, but when you're consistently falling behind like these guys have been, and that goes for pretty much the whole staff, when you can't throw first pitch strikes, you're already behind the eight ball, so to speak, as a pitcher, and the hitter has the advantage. So the more first pitch strikes they start throwing, I would expect the walk numbers to go down considerably.
All right, I mentioned we talk about Devin Williams a little bit. It has been a very interesting week, and what's amazing to me is his first appearance of the year, Sunday, last Sunday in Chicago. 10 pitches, 9 strikes, utter dominance, 2 strikeouts, totally normal looking Devin Williams. And then we get to Baltimore. He loads the bases with nobody out, manages to strike out his way through that inning and not allow any runs. That was sort of a good news, bad news situation, but maybe a harbinger of things to come. He allows a couple runs in the follow-up game. Brewers are able to work out of that. They score some runs to Williams had allowed it to allow the Orioles to tie. Brewers came back and won. And then on Sunday, he once again gets into trouble and has to be relieved by Trevor Gott with the bases loaded and two outs in the eighth after already allowing two runs. Trevor Gott, by the way, there's another story. Gott gets the out to preserve the lead. The Brewers do end up winning that game. But Devin Williams, man, that's just not something we're used to. The changeup kind of on TV, it looks good. It looks like it's still moving, and it's just that he can't seem to throw it for strikes. So players, especially as good as the Cardinals are at making contact, are laying off the pitch, and then in some cases they're hitting the pitch, serving it into center. We've seen him give up a few hits with it. All singles, not hard contact, but contact. And then we're just not seeing the swing and miss as much as we normally do. And then a lot of pitches outside the zone. So I don't know if this has already risen in three outings to the level where we might see just Devin get a rest from the eighth inning roll or take a break. I don't know. We're probably not quite there yet, but certainly not what Brewers fans are used to seeing out of him over the past year plus. What happens next with him, do you think?
I mean, I would think there's some concern, but I think it's too early to start talking about taking him out of the setup role at this point. Some of the wildness, I believe, in the Baltimore series was stemming from in that second game, especially the fact that he was pitching back-to-back days, which he did not. That obviously was the first time he'd done it in the season, and his fastball velo was way down. The game that he pitched in today on Sunday, I think you mentioned it. It just looked like his control was off. His feel for his changeup was off. So he talked after that first game in Baltimore, first of the back-to-backs, that his fastball command was off and his mechanics were off a little bit. So it's just like little things, it seems like one thing here, one thing there, a different thing the next day. They're all kind of adding up. And each time he goes out, he looks okay for a bit, but then falls right back into that pit again. So I'm certain he's going to be watching a lot of video. He's going to be working a lot with Jim Henderson and Chris Hook and the catchers to try to figure out what's going on. But the good thing is that there's been no mention of injury. That when guys start going the way he does, the first thing you think of is, is a guy hurt? But there's been no mention of that. The velo was back to more normal for him on Sunday, on Easter Sunday. So it's a situation that definitely bears watching. But again, I keep saying it's early, and I'll say it again. It is early.
So back to that Trevor Gott reference, he had two really big innings in the home opener at a time when the Brewers did not have Williams or Josh Hader available after they'd worked back-to-back days. He looked very efficient, very effective, and then he comes in Sunday and gets a massive out. I mean, the bases were loaded in a one-run game with two outs, and he gets the ground ball from Dylan Carlson, the Cardinals' leadoff hitter, to end the frame, and obviously the Brewers hold on to win. So, I mean, it's way too early to start looking at this guy the way that we looked at Brad Boxberger last year, as somebody nobody was even thinking about or talking about as Brewers fans go. And then suddenly he shows up in the season and he's one of their most valuable players. But I think it's telling to me, I mean, they didn't have many other options to go to when Williams scuffled, but they probably could have figured somebody else out. And Trevor Gott is the guy they went to. So this guy's already turning in, I would say, if we're looking for positives, because we've talked about a lot of the downsides so far. I'd say he's probably one of the biggest stories of the year so far. Am I right?
Yeah, it is a cool story. The Brewers definitely saw something in him that they liked in the offseason and brought him in, and he pitched well in the opportunities he got in spring training, made the opening day staff, and to this point has been really good in times he's been called upon. So, we've seen it with Craig Counsell in the past when he gets when he gets a comfort level with a guy and a guy delivers consistently, he starts getting bigger and bigger situations, more high leverage opportunities. So, maybe he's a guy that Craig Counsell starts going to a little bit more in pressure situations over a guy like, let's say, Jake Cousins, who's struggled with his command big time so far this season, although he did pick up his second win of the year today. So, it's just that kind of the front end of the bullpen. There's a bunch of guys and a bunch of names, and there's going to be a lot of movement back and forth, up and down. Trevor Gott's out of options, so he's kind of with the team. But a lot of those other guys do have options, so we'll start seeing arms swapped out shortly, I'm sure, once they start riding him a little bit harder. But Trevor Gott's certainly been an interesting story and a fun story to watch so far this season.
Yeah, I think that's a big outing for Jake Cousins on Sunday because the wild pitches have really burned him. He's thrown some really ill-timed wild pitches, but he had a pretty comfortable looking outing on Sunday. So that's nice to know. And I mean, like you said, we're going to be seeing some roster trimming on May 1st. The roster size drops by two guys, and you would think that the bullpen is where that's going to happen. So some of these guys are kind of in an extended audition here. Guys like Trevor Gott have kind of sealed it up between the way he's performed thus far and the fact that he has no options. So everybody's going to have to be on their game to stay here. Yandel Gustave, who we saw Sunday as well as in that game, he threw two really important innings again in that opener to make sure they didn't have to really stretch it out without having Hader and Williams. So that's another guy who's kind of in the mix and trying to keep his spot here. So with three up, three down, I explained this last week in the podcast with Kurt, where we just kind of go over some of the big plays or some of the individual moments, not necessarily big picture stuff, but things that took place during the week that we wanted to hit on. And I'll go first here with we'll each give our three things that jumped out at us. And I'll start with what happened on Sunday, the last out. I think I even mentioned Josh Hader's save last Sunday as one of my three, but it's big this Sunday because that is what his 100th career save, picks up three saves, I believe, during the week, and just continues to be dominant. And Devin Williams may struggle, but then Josh Hader comes in and he kind of settles everything down. The guy's been awesome, and that obviously, you know, bears repeating. But it's certainly not news to anybody. He continues to be one of the best relievers, if not the single best reliever in baseball. 100th career save. There are a couple guys ahead of him on the Brewers' all-time save list. John Axford among them, no surprise. But this continues to be Josh Hader at his best. He has not faltered at all. Maybe a couple hard contacts in there so far this year. But certainly, you know, when you strike out the 2-3-4 hitters, like, you know, closing it out with a strikeout of Nolan Arenado to end the game, that is no small feat. So I was thinking, Todd, maybe they could bring him into the eighth. But with the 3-4-5 hitters due up, he does end up facing the 2-3-4 anyway with Goldschmidt the 2. So arguably or inarguably the harder subset and gets out anyway. So kind of a tight finish, but a good finish for the Brewers on Sunday. All right, give me one of your three things that jumped out at you this week.
I like excuse me, I liked Colby Milner setting a major league record, and excuse me, I wrote about it while we were in Baltimore, 96th career appearance before he gets a decision and he picks up a victory throwing three pitches in relief of Jake Cousins, and he's the most unassuming, ordinary looking guy. You'd walk past him in the clubhouse and you think like he might be a clubby or something like that. You don't think immediately major league pitcher, but I was definitely excited and happy about finally getting his name in the record books with a victory. And as he said, it's kind of a, I don't know if ignominious is the word you would use, but it's not exactly a word that, or a record that you brag about specifically, not having a decision in 95 previous appearances, but still pretty cool to see him get a win.
Yeah, like you said, you wrote about it. I think second place is what, 56 or something? He blew it out of the water. The other, you know, the most appearances without a decision. I don't remember offhand what it was.
I don't recall either. I'm sorry.
I think if you hold a mirror up to him, you'll see Eric Yardley, because Yardley, another sidewinder who kind of rebuilt up his career a little bit, and you know, an unassuming guy who wound up being very effective for the Brewers for at least a year. And Milner's really good, man. He may not throw hard, but he is, even last year when he wasn't really necessarily given any high leverage stuff, he's awesome. Like he's really performed. And and back to that conversation about bullpen guys, how do you drop him at this point? There's it's just gonna be a tough call when May 1st rolls around. All right, my number two, we go back to the first game of the week on Monday in Baltimore. That was a loss, but Tyrone Taylor certainly did his best to keep things close. Brewers lost that game 2-0, but Taylor made two sensational catches, both in the early innings in center field, slams into the wall on one, snags the ball kind of over his shoulder on another. Really impressive stuff. And you know, we've talked about Tyrone Taylor's role on this team. He's a very capable center fielder. When Lorenzo Cain is, he's going to need breaks. He's getting up there in age, and he's had injury problems in the past. So there's going to be a lot of time for Tyrone Taylor. Sunday, he comes through with a massive, massive two-run double that essentially gives them the runs they need to win the game. So he had a big spot Sunday. Hasn't been smoking the ball necessarily, but has certainly come up big and bookended this week, defense and offense. So it ends up kind of being a nice little week for Tyrone Taylor.
Yeah, absolutely. He's done really well in the opportunities he's been given. Obviously, off to a slow start at the plate so far this season. Although he did have the big two-run double that eventually won the game for the Brewers on Easter Sunday. Just a great kid, testament to perseverance. You know, he's one of the oldest, longest tenured players in the organization, along with Brent Suter, both drafted in 2012 and. You know, just kind of kept his nose to the grindstone, kept getting better, kept improving. And now he is, as Craig Counsell would say, a bona fide major leaguer who belongs on a team and fills a number of roles and does a number of things well.
Yeah, one of two position players homegrown on this team, I believe, Taylor and Keston Hira. And like you said, Taylor's been in the organization forever. You got a number two for me?
I would go back to that Baltimore series and just I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but what Corbin Burns, his second start of the season, was a really good one. That looked much more like the Corbin Burns that we were seeing all through last year before he won the Cy Young Award. The command was there. He had the strikeout stuff going, you know, hard on Baltimore hitters, just all around really good performance. Wound up going seven innings, 97 pitches. So the Brewers starters are getting they're nearing that triple digit mark for pitches now per start. The wraps have pretty much been taken off by Craig Counsell, and he's not not going to be light on those guys like he was the first start. So obviously a good sign from him in that second start. And then also this isn't particularly Brewer related, but it just jumped out at me. When did Jorge Lopez start throwing 100 miles an hour like he was doing
I
against the
know,
Brewers?
right?
That was insane watching that. And I looked up at the radar gun and I was like, is it malfunctioning? I don't remember him throwing harder than 95 when he was with the Brewers.
Yeah, that was wild. And the Brewers did get to him. They were able to get the runs they needed to win that game. But Lopez, a guy who was traded, he was traded to Kansas City for Moustakas, right? In that deal in
Yeah,
2018.
Brett Phillips and
Right.
Jorge Lopez, right?
Yeah, what a week for Brett Phillips, by the way. But yes, so he's now with Baltimore and getting opportunities in high leverage situations. And whoo boy, he throws gas now. So the Orioles are not in a position where they're competing. I feel like Jorge Lopez is going to be a late season acquisition for some team, and he's going to be very effective in a pennant race. We definitely saw some good things from him. I'm counting that as your third, Todd,
Okay.
the Lopez reference. So I'm going to close it down
Okay.
with an amusing moment. From the home opener on Monday, when Albert Pujols tried to steal third base. The man, by the way, Albert Pujols can still swing the bat. We saw that in Sunday's game. We saw it in Thursday's game too. But in Sunday, he hit a really big 3-run homer. Very majestic swing still. But his base running, he may not be known for it. He was on second base, tried to catch Brandon Woodruff napping. It wasn't like a miscommunication or a mistake. I think he really sort of timed out how Brandon Woodruff's sort of process was going before each pitch. And throughout, he could sneak in from second to third. Woodruff was able to sort of calmly back off the mound, get him, throw him out. A lot of chatter about that after the game, actually, where Woodruff is talking about there were a couple of pitches earlier in the game where home plate umpire Lance Barrett had they would have been third strikes to Paul Goldschmidt and called them both balls. And Goldschmidt was able to reach after that, and Woodruff was upset about it, and a lot of people were. They were strikes. But Woodruff talked about how in the past that might have rattled him to the point that he makes a poor pitch, even as recently as last year, and he was able to get out of it at that point thereafter, and I think strand the bases loaded in that inning. So he talked about that, and that was another situation where he was able to kind of stay calm, get the out. It wasn't like an obvious. It was an easy out, but it was still relatively close. So I thought that was a really interesting storyline. You talked about Corbin Burnes really having a nice second start. Same thing with Brandon Woodruff. I mean, it's very rare to see those two guys lose back-to-back starts. The Cubs were able to do that to start the year, but both guys get wins in their second starts and looking very much the part of staff aces. So, very encouraging situation all the way around. All right, let's move into the next thing. Remember when? You know what I said last week? I didn't like the name of that. Too punny, too ridiculous. You know what? I'm keeping it. I'm sorry. Just sue me. It's just the way it is now. I wanted to go back in history a little bit, and I said that this would always relate to something looking forward, but I don't know if that's true. Just something timely as it relates to the Milwaukee Brewers and the past. Something that hopefully a lot of people don't know about. And Todd, I found something that I didn't know about. The first game in County Stadium history back in 1953. It's, of course, this was the home opener week. This was the home opener in 1953. It was the second game of the season overall. Kind of weird. But did you realize, Todd, that in 1953, the first game in County Stadium ended in a walk-off home run? I know that's a little before your time, but I had no idea. Had you ever heard that?
I had not heard that. Who hit it?
Guy by the name of Billy Bruton, or Bill
Oh,
Bruton.
yeah.
Yeah, kind of an underrated guy. Never an all-star, but and he was a 27-year-old rookie in 1953. This was only his second game ever, but he actually had a really good first game too. Their first game was on the road, and he ended up leading the league in stolen bases his first 3 seasons with the team, and led the league once in runs. And he was a big triples hitter. This is the 10th inning, April 14th, 1953. It was a 3-2 win over the St. Louis Cardinals, none other. He ends up hits this walk-off home run in the 10th. So you can imagine 35,000 fans on hand, first game at County Stadium, first game in Milwaukee, major league game in 52 years. And before that, you get to kind of into baseball's prehistory, so it's a little dicey. But goes over the right field fence. Actually, as he was approaching third base, he was told by the umpire to go back to second because the umpire thought it had bounced over the wall, or that there'd been fan interference. Interference or something. So the manager, Charlie Grimm, runs out on the field, protests, and obviously there's no replay, but somebody figured this out because they were like, no, that's in fact a home run. Everybody's chanting Bruton, Bruton, Bruton. He also made a diving catch in center field in the eighth to rob Stan Musial, which would have scored 2 runs. So nice little day for Bill Bruton, who I think has a for people who follow the Milwaukee Braves are still like old timers who remember the Braves. They remember Brewton very well. He was a really important player for them. He did not play in the 1957 World Series because of a knee injury, but he was there in 1958. Actually had a tremendous World Series. Hit 412 in that series. They lost in 7 games. I believe he has 2 bases loaded triples in the same game at one point in his career, which I think he's only been done one time since then. I think Dwayne Kuiper, if I believe the Racine native Dwayne Kuiper, is the only one to have done it since. So he's an interesting guy, and Braves history is a lot of fun to go into. That's obviously long enough ago where nobody in the starting lineup is around today, but still worth celebrating that stuff. And that Cardinals lineup had 3 Hall of Famers: Musial, Shane Deese, Eno Slaughter. But Warren Spahn went 10 innings. In fact, Warren Spahn's bunt single attempt in the 10th was the first out of the inning before Brewton hits his walk-off homer. So Warren Spahn still batting in the 10th, baby. You better believe it. We will not have pitchers batting at any point, 10th inning or otherwise, going forward here in Major League Baseball. But
yay.
yes, much to the delight of many involved. So that is this week's Remember When. All right, Todd, we're going to close it down. I've called it Kurt Blanche when Kurt's on the podcast, to his sort of like final take of the week. We can do something a little simpler. We'll do Todd's take to shut down this edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. So before I send you away, give me your interesting take. Can be baseball, non-baseball related, whatever you feel. Tell me your take of the week here before we get out of here.
I don't know if people are interested, but trip to Baltimore for the Brewers obviously was the first trip for the team since 2003. And that was one of 3 ballparks that I still need to get to yet. Actually, that was 4. So I knocked one off my personal list. I'll be going to Fenway later this season. So that will leave me with just Yankee Stadium and the new Ranger Stadium. So a little personal triumph for me there. And that was the first time I'd actually been to Baltimore proper. Ballpark, surprisingly, in my top 10 favorite ballparks now. It was a really cool place to watch a game. Cool area around there. Just everything was really neat about it. And, I remember when it first opened up and the Cal Ripken stuff and everything. And was glad we were finally able to get there. I was wondering if it was ever going to happen after that series was canceled during the pandemic year and everything. And then with the lockout starting this season, that series could have been in danger. But thankfully, they were able to get it in. And although I had some travel problems getting there, 6-hour delay in Detroit.
Gee.
So I landed in Baltimore at 3:30 Monday morning, which was not a lot of fun.
Oh my gosh!
Considering it was a opening day game, yeah. So a little challenging there, but other than that, it was from a personal standpoint gratifying to be able to check another box on the list.
Do you think any right-handed hitters will hit home runs at Camden Yards this year?
No. I was talking with Brasso about that after I think the last game, and he was just shaking his head because he had such great success against John Means while he was playing for Tampa, and Means was pitching for the Orioles. And I had asked, I think he had 4 career homers against Means, and he said 3 of them he hit in Baltimore. But with the way the wall has been moved back now, he would never hit another one there, he said, because it's just they went from ridiculous in one respect, being too close and too easy, to being far too far and too hard to hit one now. So they definitely overcorrected.
Yeah, wasn't it like 50 feet or some? It was not an insignificant volume that they moved that wall back.
Yeah, they moved it way back, and they raised it quite a bit too. It was such a low wall before, as everybody remembers. And now they just, again, they just overcorrected in several aspects. And now it's going to be next to impossible to hit a ball out there.
I have never been to Camden Yards, but I picture it similar to how I picture Nationals Park a little bit, where it is a cool area outside, a little hard to get to maybe, a little hard to find parking, a little hard to congregate, but once you get there, it's pretty cool. I don't know if you got a sense of sort of the buzz outside. I mean, obviously, if you're running from the airport to game one, you weren't getting it necessarily that first night, but...
I would say, so based on the way the ballpark was laid out, the amenities, the concourses, the way you're able to walk around the entire ballpark 360 degrees, you can go out to Boog's Barbecue, you're out by that warehouse in right field and everything. It's a combination. Adam McAlvey and I were talking about this. We both agreed. It's a combination between Oracle Park and Comerica.
Interesting. Wow.
With that warehouse out in the outfield, that obviously gives it a different look and a little bit different feel. But just in terms of the ballparks themselves and the way they present and from our purposes and everything, kind of a combination of those two.
Cool. I have to get there. I'd love to check that out. I haven't been to many ballparks out east, so I have been to Fenway and I have been to Nationals Park, but that's pretty much it. So I would love to do that. All right, Todd, thanks for joining us this week. We will are you no, it's I was thinking the Brewers are going to Pittsburgh. That's not for another week. So they're going to stay at home, play the Pirates this week, and then it's Philadelphia, I believe, for three games in at Citizens Bank Ballpark. Are we still calling it Citizens Bank Ballpark? I don't know if that's
I
true.
believe
All
so.
right, good.
I believe it is. Yeah. So we'll see the triumphant return of Babe Vogelback and Babe Gamel and the
Yes.
Pirates lineup starting Monday. And then Kurt Hole gets his first taste of a cheesesteak in Philly over the weekend. It should be very exciting.
Yes, Daniel Vogelbach is going to get a very nice round of applause when the Pirates roll into town. Leadoff hitter, Daniel Vogelbach.
Yeah.
That's so good. All right, Todd, thanks again for joining us. We will chat with you again next week.
Sounds good. And JR, as you know, it's always a pleasure.
They find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Thanks for reading. Find us on Twitter if you'd like. I'm at JR Radcliffe. He's at Todd underscore Rosiak. And keep track of everything at jsonline.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will catch you again very soon. Bye-bye.